Freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it on to our children in the bloodstream. The only way they can inherit the freedom we have known is if we fight for it, protect it, defend it, and then hand it to them with the well-taught lessons of how they in their lifetime must do the same. And if you and I don't do this, then you and I may well spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it once was like in America when men were free.
Welcome back, everyone, to Patriot Coalition Live. I'm Jason Marocek. Thanks for joining us today. Our goal is to create a timeless resource to teach about the U.S. Constitution and the proper role of government, the importance of America's Judeo-Christian heritage, and how to defend against threats to our republic. Well, you are stuck with just me for a little while. With everything going on with our new venture at conservativeeconomy.com, I've decided to recapture some of the time we had previously spent on coordinating this podcast in an effort to free us up to do more with the time that we have. Both efforts, this podcast and conservativeeconomy.com, are extremely important in the fight for liberty, and we must ensure that we are spending our precious time wisely. This early growth period is critically important to conservativeeconomy.com, so it just had to be done. So we appreciate your understanding. Speaking of conservativeeconomy.com, gang, this podcast is important because liberty is important, and it has a price. Brave men and women have sacrificed for generations to preserve it, many of whom gave the ultimate sacrifice for liberties that we have enjoyed. But the enemies of freedom are actively attacking our liberties through censorship, canceling, and destroying livelihoods because they don't like dissent, and they don't like people who share truths which threaten their power. Today, one of the biggest threats comes from what we call the three-headed beast of mainstream media, big tech, and big business. Now, earlier this year, Google, Apple, Amazon, Web Services, they all canceled Parler or stopped giving access to Parler. Social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter regularly suspend accounts when they don't like their posts. So why continue to send your money to Amazon when they are canceling and censoring those who stand up for liberty, when you can spend your hard-earned money with freedom-loving companies who share your values and your principles? We have tons of companies to shop from with over 2,400 categories of products, with more being added every week. So chances are you're going to find what you are looking for at conservativeeconomy.com. Now, if you shop at a business that you love and you think that that business would be a great fit at conservativeeconomy.com, go to our contact page and let us know. Or if you own a business, go to the Sell Here link at conservativeeconomy.com and tell us about your business. Again, the website is conservativeeconomy.com. Will you check us out today, please? Again, conservativeeconomy.com. Okay, so let's get into today's episode. The title of the episode today is Article 1, Section 8, Limited Powers of Congress. This is part 3 of this series. So as a review, Article 1 of the U.S. Constitution is all about Congress. Article 1, Section 8 describes the limited powers of Congress. And in today's episode, we are talking about Article 1, Section 8, Clauses 4 through 7. Now, we said from the beginning that the temporary loan of authority that we, the people, give to Congress to create laws that we must then all live by is one of the most sacred authorities that we can entrust to them. If that's the case, then the part of the Constitution where we define those powers must be one of the most important sections in this brilliant document. We're going to continue to take our time in this section because it's important, and it has relevance to every aspect of our lives, and because it's one of the most abused sections in the entire Constitution. Okay, so let's get into it. Clause 4 in Section 8. It says this, quote, "The Congress shall have power to establish a uniform rule of naturalization and uniform laws on the subject of bankruptcies throughout the United States." Okay, so let's first get into the definition of a couple terms, right? So a couple of the key terms there is naturalization and bankruptcies, right? So naturalization, what does this term mean? I mean, we all know what a naturalized citizen is, but let's go back and look at what the meaning of that word is at the time that the Constitution was written. So for this, we usually either go to Johnson's dictionary from, he wrote over the course of about, I guess, 30 years from 1855 to 1880, I'm sorry, 1755 to 1785, or to Webster's 1828 dictionary. Both are considered contemporaneous, meaning they happened at the same time. So today we're going to grab a definition from Johnson's dictionary. So naturalization is the act of investing aliens with the privileges of native subjects. Now, probably goes without saying, but you know, back then they weren't looking to the skies for aliens. They, when they said aliens, it was somebody who was from another country, who was foreign to their own country. So again, that's the act of investing aliens with the privileges of native subjects. So it's interesting, you know, we like to go back again to the debates in the Constitutional Convention to understand the meaning of these clauses. One of the delegates, Roger Sherman, who later on became a member of the House of Representatives, when he was a member of the House, this was February 3rd, 1790, he essentially made the case that the reason for this clause was because if you allow an immigrant, you know, an alien who becomes an immigrant, you naturalize them in your state, the types of people that you are allowing into your state without vetting, et cetera, I don't want you then, or not you, but I don't want people then, of course, to move and move to my state. So let's say South Carolina is, you know, they have pretty low standards for who they're allowing to immigrate into their state because we're not setting the rule of naturalization nationwide, but every state is doing it on their own. So let's say South Carolina has a very low standard for who they're allowing to immigrate. And then they say, you know what, South Carolina is nice, but Virginia looks even nicer. Well, Virginians don't want to have to bear the brunt of those immigrants who came to South Carolina because they had very low standards. So that was one of the reasons why it was important for the country as a whole at a national level to set that rule of naturalization. Now, here's another reason. I know it's hard to imagine, but what if one state made immigrating so easy because they meant to increase their population in order to get more representation in Congress? I know states would never conspire to do that, right? So let's just say they did. Obviously, that presents a problem as well, because then you have people gaming the system, finding, you know, loopholes or clauses that were never introduced in the Constitution that would allow them to gain more political power. Again, never would have thought about it, but. So, you know, let's talk really quick then about the difference between naturalization, which is what this clause talks about, and border enforcement, because they are not the same thing. In this clause, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4, we're talking about naturalization. That is the method and means by which an alien becomes a citizen of the country. That is wholly separate from border enforcement, which is who do we allow across the border? And we will get into that, and that comes later on in the Constitution, both in Article 1 and in Article 4, Section 4, which states the United States shall protect each of them, meaning the states, against invasion. So put a pin in that. We will come back to that. This clause is only dealing with the naturalization, and that is the means, the method by which our national government can give a person citizenship. Okay, so that's the naturalization part of this clause. And then there was also the bankruptcies, you know, providing a uniform rule for bankruptcies. Why is this important? Well, imagine a person or a business who, if there's not a national rule and it's only set state by state about who's filing for bankruptcy, imagine if a person or a business filing for bankruptcy in one state, again, we'll use South Carolina and Virginia. They say, hey, I'm going to file for bankruptcy in South Carolina, but their creditor, the person who loaned them the money, is in Virginia. Well, if South Carolina doesn't have any laws against filing for bankruptcy and their creditor isn't subject to the laws of South Carolina, that creditor in Virginia is out of luck. Basically, people could borrow money and then abscond to another state in order to get out of paying it. What would happen if that if we allowed for that, if we didn't have a uniform rule of bankruptcies in the country? No one would lend money because they couldn't have any surety that they'd get that money back. There would be no enforcement. So it was really important to have this as one of the clauses. Okay. So the next clause in Article 1, Section 8 is Clause 5. And this one says, quote, "The Congress shall have power to coin money, regulate the value thereof, and of foreign coin, and fix the standard of weights and measures." Okay. So this is mostly self-explanatory, but a couple of points I'll just throw out there. Again, going back to, you know, we'll use Johnson's Dictionary for the definition of money, which is metal coined for the purposes of commerce. So that's what they were talking about here when they talked about money, metal coined for the purposes of commerce. Now, Webster's Dictionary, they have a definition for coin. This is, again, 1828. To stamp a metal, this is the verb form of coin, to coin money. And Webster's definition is to stamp a metal and convert it into money or to mint it. So this is what we were talking about in this section. It's to take a piece of hunk of metal, gold, silver, copper, whatever it happens to be, and put a mark on it to say that this is going to be money. It can be exchanged. It's a unit of exchange of value. So let's consider why this is important. So in 1786, this is the year before the Constitutional Convention, the basic unit of value in the colonies was called the dollar, and it consisted of 375 and 64 one-hundredths grains of fine silver. So there was a very specific amount of silver that was defined to be equal to $1. And that was the benchmark. That was the standard. All other coins that were minted in America, all other coins that were minted in America and foreign coins were measured against this value of the dollar. So the Congress was able to say, okay, $1 in American silver is worth, you know, X number of coins from, or let's say pounds from England, or francs from France. So they were able to set that standard so that there would be some form and some way that they could manage the commerce that was going on in the United States. And it wasn't just everyone deciding for themselves what the value of things, of a coin that the government produced was worth. So in short, all other coins, this is why they say standards and measures too, right? Or weights and measures. The Congress was given that power to fix the standards of weights and measures because, you know, let's say a bushel of flour or, you know, how much a pound is, the ounces, et cetera. There had to be some standard for commerce, for people to have trust in the commerce system, the commercial system, okay? So speaking of money and the value of it, you work extremely hard for your money. And if you're like the rest of us, you want to put it to good use for your family and your children's future. But if you spend your money with Amazon, you empower them to cancel and censor people with conservative principles and to give billions, that's billions of dollars, to the enemies of liberty. Now, when you shop with freedom-loving businesses, like with our sponsor, conservativeeconomy.com, you weaken those who mean to do us harm and you empower freedom-loving companies while helping us out at this podcast too. So, gang, I have ordered some really cool stuff through conservativeeconomy.com already. You know, towels, mattress covers, body armor, rifle optics, holsters, copy paper, tools, food, all sorts of stuff. We have so many categories of products that you'll be bound to find something that you're going to like. So please come by to conservativeeconomy.com and shop there today. So moving along in the Constitution, now we're in Clause 6 in Article 1, Section 8. It says, quote, "The Congress shall have power to provide for the punishment of counterfeiting the securities and current coin of the United States." So again, this is one that's mostly self-explanatory, but just for those who maybe not be familiar or haven't really looked at the definition of what a security is, think of it like a government issued bond, right? The government is issuing something for your security that says, hey, I gave the government this much money to use, and they gave me something, a security or a bond in exchange, so that I would know that they would pay me back. So they're essentially saying, hey, if you're going to go out and you're going to like try to take a hunk of silver, shave some of it off, make it look the same, but maybe slightly smaller, slightly thinner, and put the same stamp on it so that you can get away with take people's trust for granted and get away with counterfeiting our coins, or come up with a printed version of a bond like the government issues and ask the government to pay you back, we're going to come after you. Right. So it's not good for the country and or for the economy. So that's why they gave that power to Congress. And then our final clause for today's episode is Clause 7. And Clause 7 says this, quote, the Congress shall have power to establish post offices and post roads. Now, after Benjamin Franklin suggested he added the cutting of canals to the list of powers of Congress. This is something that he wanted to see in there. The cutting of canals, meaning, you know, the things, you know, like the Erie Canal or the canals in Venice, you know, they cut out or the Panama Canal, they cut out a swath of land, fill it with water so it can be navigated by boats. Ben Franklin thought that would be a good idea. So he was a delegate to the Constitutional Convention. Another delegate, Mr. Sherman, he objected to this. He said, look, the expense in such cases, meaning cutting canals, would fall on the United States, the general government, the central government, and the benefit would only accrue to the places where the canals are cut. So everyone's paying for the benefit to be felt in one area. Is this familiar? Considering how we spend our money today, where, you know, your tax dollars, hundreds and hundreds of your tax dollars, every time you pay taxes are going to things that you will probably never see or get the benefit from. And this was Mr. Sherman's objection to Ben Franklin's idea. Now, James Madison also, he suggested allowing Congress to provide for charters of incorporation to accomplish similar projects to canals, other internal infrastructure improvements where the states themselves could not accomplish them for one reason or another, generally because maybe they didn't have the funds to do it. So he said, well, why don't we just allow the Congress to grant charters of incorporation where they can provide for these projects and build them? So when they put that idea to the vote to the delegates at the Constitutional Convention, it failed. And even several times later in Madison's life, he corresponded with his colleagues, and he acknowledged that although he thought it would be a great power to get invest in Congress, it was voted against. You know, Madison he was for giving government a little bit more power than some of the other delegates, but he was principled about it. He said, look, we voted on it and it didn't pass. So that is the law of the land. He recognized that. Wish we had more like him today, right? So then along the same lines, in the first Congress of the United States, when the subject of incorporating a Bank of the United States came up, Madison, again, the one who was proposing that the Congress be invested with the power to incorporate, you know, various entities to do these things. So when they talked about incorporating a Bank of the United States, Madison jumped in. He said, look, I well recollect that a power to grant charters of incorporation had been proposed in the General Convention and rejected. So he's like, look, I've been there. I've done that. I tried this. That wasn't one of the powers that we gave to Congress in our convention. And so to incorporate a Bank of the United States is contrary to the Constitution. And by the way, again, as with all episodes, you know, these quotes and these references to where these things were said are going to be in the show notes. So definitely go to patriotcoalitionlive.com and you will see them all in our show notes based on their episodes. Then later on, this is now February 23rd, 1835. There's a Senator Cobb in the United States Senate. He delivers a phenomenal discourse on why the Cumberland Road where the Cumberland Gap is, I believe, why that extension someone proposed a bill in Congress to essentially pay, I think it was $150,000 at that time, to build a road going from the I think it was the Ohio River to the Muskingum in Ohio. Senator Cobb, I went back and I read this whole debate that they had, and his points were phenomenal. So if you ever get a chance, again, if you go to patriotcoalitionlive.com, episode 31, we'll have that linked for you. He basically says, look, this is unconstitutional. We had the opportunity to allow Congress to do these things, and we shut it down. We said, no, this is not something we're willing to let them do. So all of the historical correspondence that I have studied affirms that the framers understood that Congress was only invested with very specific enumerated authorities and could not legislate outside of those powers. So this clause, Clause 7, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 7, is probably the closest the Constitution gets to authorizing Congress to pass infrastructure bills. And yet it's limited to building post offices and the roads connecting post offices. That's it. That's what we allowed Congress to do. Now consider that Congress today is considering spending $2 trillion on everything but post offices and roads, and they're calling it an infrastructure bill. Gang, they are not authorized to spend that money. That money, meaning your money, that is our money. And in our Constitution, it doesn't give them the authority to spend money on those things. So that is the takeaway from this clause. So that's it for the number of clauses that we're going to cover today. Again, that's Article 1, Section 8, Clauses 4 through 7. Clause 4 gives Congress the authority to decide who can become a citizen of the United States, but it does not authorize the enforcement of the border. That authority comes later in Article 1, Section 8, and again in Article 4. And we will get to that. Clause 5 authorizes Congress to coin money. This means that they can stamp a piece of metal with a marking declaring its value. It does not mean they can print paper, which, as we said last episode, was specifically voted down in the convention. Clause 6 basically said, hey, counterfeiting is not allowed. You can't counterfeit things like government bonds and coins. Clause 7 authorizes them to spend money on post offices and post roads, the roads connecting post offices. And that's it. So again, the takeaway here, and it will be, this is a recurring theme with Article 1, Section 8, is know your rights, know what the limitations of the central government are in terms of making laws and spending your money, so that you can call them out, call out your elected officials and let them know, and hey, you are way off the reservation, you are out of bounds, you're not authorized to do this, and if you don't fix this, we are going to have to find somebody to replace you because you clearly don't understand the document that gives authority to the federal government. So use this information, again, to educate your elected officials, but also your fellow patriots, right? We can't hold our elected officials accountable if we don't know what they're accountable to. So we have to learn this stuff. We have to dig in and understand the intent, the original intent and the context, so that we are not swayed by current arguments that say, well, they didn't know what they're talking about then, and it doesn't really apply to today. Okay, if you think that they should have another power, then do it the right way and use Article 5 and amend the Constitution. But you can't do it the way it's done now. Okay, so if you would like to support us, please go to patriotcoalitionlive.com/support. Your support is a big help to us. If you're not already a regular subscriber, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, at places like iHeartRadio and Spotify. And thanks again, everyone. We will see you here next time.